Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of Train Smart and Move Well. My name is Philip Jacobs and I'd like the chance to say thank you for coming. Thank you for listening to this and giving me some of the most valuable resources that you have, your time. This is my only third English episode so far in this podcast on Train Smart and Move Well, and I'm excited to have Evelyn Rosier as my guest. Eve and I met at the International Parkour Gathering this year in Gjerlev in Denmark, and right from the start, I could kind of sense a very, very positive energy coming from her. During the week that we spent together, she also presented a speech during one of the morning assemblies at the school, where she shared some of her experiences in life, and especially how dreams can be shattered and broken down into pieces. But also, on the other hand, how she recovered from those big hits, made the best out of it, and found solutions, even in the most seemingly unsuitable and craziest situations. So, yeah, get ready for a crazy full episode about rugby, about the dream to attend the Olympic Games, about sports injuries, about big disappointments, but also recoveries from that and how positive mindsets can get you out of it, about energetic ambitions for the future to spend a life as a digital nomad driving and living in a 5-ton track. I hope you guys will like this episode. My name is Philip Jacobs and yeah, enjoy listening. You ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Name?
Evelyn.
Nationality?
Belgian.
Born in?
Antwerp.
Your favorite meal to cook at home?
Spaghetti with ham and cheese.
Your favorite meal to eat out at a restaurant?
Ooh, gratin dauphinois.
Say that again.
Gratin dauphinois. It's like potatoes thinly sliced and then like with cheese and cream in between and then in the oven.
Ah, Kartoffelauflauf in German. Got you. Continents you've traveled to?
Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Oceania, I don't know how you say it in English. The US, Europe, of course. And yeah, South America is the one that I'm missing because I also did Asia.
That's good stuff. Two countries still on your list that you need to see?
Peru and Thailand.
Nice. Your worst sports injury?
That was my broken cheekbone. It was the worst and the best because it gave me time to take a step back, but it was a real surgery.
So. Okay, maybe we get back to that when we talk about rugby. Your favorite exercise in the weight room?
Bench press.
Your hate exercise in the weight room?
I think all those machines.
All those machine stuff. Okay, last question, Eve. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a toast with many veggies because I like to have a salty breakfast. So there was a combination of beans and spinach and paprika. I don't know how you say it in English. And all those mixtures.
Well, in Australia, they say capsicum, which is absolutely weird, right? And in British English, I think they just call it pepper. Anyways, Evie, thank you for being here today. Welcome to Train Smart, Move Well. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Now that you've bravely answered this weird combination of different random questions about yourself, please just take a moment to tell our listeners, in your own words, who are you? What are you doing at the moment? What you've been up to lately? And yeah, who's Evie?
Okay, who's Evie? So I'm Evelyn, or Energetic Evie, as I call myself. I am from Belgium, as I said, and who am I? I'm a person who always is on the move because I love traveling, I love moving and all of that. And so basically that is what I'm doing. I'm building my own freedom life. So I, probably we're going to talk about this as well later on, but I quit my job 1.5 years ago and I started my own company, and now I just recently bought a truck which is going to become my house on wheels and office on wheels. So Energetic Evie is always learning, always improving, always finding something new to do as an adventure and a challenge.
That sounds super exciting. And our paths have only recently crossed at the International Parkour Gathering when we met in Gerlo in Denmark. This was in the beginning of August, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is how we met for the first time. I remember we were playing this game, pushing the hands away, trying to hold our balance. That was the first time that we got into contact. Yeah, and then we spent 1 week together moving at the parkour camp, and you also held a really interesting talk during the morning assembly when
Thank
all the
you.
Attendees come together and sing a song, get some information, and then anybody who's interested in sharing some of his stories, then you were standing up there and telling something
yeah.
about yourself, which was basically really inspiring for myself. And that was the first moment where I was like, hey, I should invite this one to my podcast. So I'm very happy that you're here today, and I look forward to what we're going to talk about.
Thank you so much.
before we dive into, you know, you starting your own business and you getting a track that is going to be your home in the, I don't know, next couple of months, years, whatsoever.
Yeah.
Would you mind talking a little bit about your movement and sports background? I think this would be a great place to start. What I also didn't know in the beginning, that you were a rugby player and not just a normal rugby player, you were a professional rugby player. So maybe give us a little bit of an insight as to, you know, when did you start with sports in general as a child, and how did it come to you excelling in rugby professionally?
Yeah, sure. Well, for that, I think we have to go back quite a long time. So I'm now 32. At that time, I think when I started doing some sport, I think I was 5, running around, doing some athletics, as we had this athletic run around thing close by. And so that's where I started. I also started doing acrogym. It's like climbing, making like towers with people, kind of. And I was always the little one at 6 years old, on top of everybody. Now, I always got pretty quickly tired of any sport, because I always wanted to learn more and I wanted to do more stuff. So I've been doing, as I said, athletics. I've been doing acrogym. I've also done soccer. I've been doing judo, jiu-jitsu, like many, many different things. And all of that, I think, from the age of 5 up until the age of 12. And at the age of 12, I basically discovered rugby. Now, I didn't discover it on my own. It was my sister who came up with the idea to go and play rugby 1 year before that. And she was doubting whether she was going to do boxing or whether she was going to do something else. And there was a rugby club that we discovered just around the corner at the same spot where the athletics were. And so she started, and she really, really liked it a lot. There was no women's team, so she started playing just with the guys as only girl, or maybe there were a few girls, but the only one that stayed was her. And then I went to go and try it out, and I thought, wow, this is fun. And so I started at the age of 12. And then, of course, I was a category lower, let's say, as my sister, because she's 3 years older. So we were, let's say, the two sisters of the club, the only girls playing rugby there.
Fighting against them boys, yeah.
Yeah. Being part of the guys, rolling in the mud, tackling them, winning from them, stuff like that. That was really cool. And so I never kind of stopped with rugby until, well, recently or a few years ago. But that was the only sport, I think, that I've never got tired of, because you have so many different personalities that all need to fit in. And for example, at soccer, I had the feeling everybody needed to be good with their feet and everybody needed to be quick. In acrogym, everybody needed to be super flexible and everybody needed to be that. Like in rugby, I have the feeling you have, no matter what posture you have, whether you are fast or slow, it doesn't matter. Like everybody has a piece of the puzzle and it becomes like a big puzzle. And how I continued at the age of 18. I was going to study in a different city, and that's where I then also wasn't allowed anymore to play as only girl in the guys team.
So then you changed to the women's team. Before we dive into that, you have to understand the majority of my listeners is from Germany, and in Germany, soccer, as in football, soccer is the thing. That's our main sport.
Like in
so
Belgium.
not many people know exactly, and that includes myself, know what rugby is, what it constitutes. So I know there's a lot of people running around the field. I know in comparison to the American football type, you wear even less things to cover up and to protect yourself. So it might be even crazier. But maybe in a nutshell, can you explain to me and our audience, What does rugby? How many people are there? What is the goal? How does it work?
Yeah, so I think just as soccer, you also have different types of rugby. So it's the same as well. Well, I play two different types of rugby. So you have the rugby, which is the most known one, or was the most known one, which is rugby 15-a-side. That's called 15s. Now, as it says itself, it means that there's 15 people on each side. So you have a team of 15 and you have a team of 15, and they basically run against each other on a field of 100 meters on 70 meters, more or less, a rectangle field. And so, as you say it indeed correctly, the only thing we have as protection is a mouth gear. So just we don't lose our teeth, but all the rest, it's okay to be smashed.
Great stuff.
And basically, you can tackle the person who has the ball. All the rest you can't tackle. Mm-hmm. And you can tackle from the shoulders downwards. So you're not allowed to tackle the head. That is very strictly forbidden. So it's still relatively safe. And besides that, you have an oval ball and you always pass backwards. Now, it always seems very weird to people when you say you run forward, but you pass backwards.
Yeah, I never got that. Like whenever I was, you know, like passing by in a sports bar or so and they would show rugby, it's like, huh? They're running forwards but always passing it backwards. How? Why? So it's a rule. You can only pass backwards. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason why, well, basically your ball is kind of a line. So you have to imagine there's a line going through the ball, and wherever the ball is, that line moves up or forward. And you always have to stay on your side of the line. So one team needs to stay on the other side, and then we stay at our side if I have the ball, right? And so, yeah, you pass backwards, but with the running forward, you bring the ball forward. You can also kick with your feet forward, and that's also where I mean, like, everybody has a piece of the puzzle. Like, not everybody's necessarily good with their hands and their feet, so everybody has a bit their own role. And yeah, the goal is that basically you bring the ball to the other side of the field where you have a line, and you have to press the ball down. And then you have 5 points. And
this
every
is the,
time,
the touchdown we know from
yeah,
American
it's a try,
football, right?
The try, as we call it, the try line. And that's 5 points. And then you had have a chance to actually kick in between the posts. And if you manage that, you have 2 additional points. So that's basically more or less the most important thing. You also have the scrum, so where people 8 against 8 push against each other. That happens when the ball falls forward, because we can only pass it backwards. So if it falls forward, it's a mistake, and you push against each other. And if the ball goes outside, just like in soccer, you throw it in, only that we throw it in while we lift people in the air. So that's a...
So they have a better overview, yeah?
Yeah, of course, better overview. You can see the ball coming. So yeah, that's the rugby 15s. And then you have the Olympic rugby. So since 2016, rugby is officially an Olympic sport. However, that's not the rugby 15s, which is 2x40 minutes game. It's a rugby sevens, which is seven aside. So 7 against 7, but the same pitch. And a game there is 2x7 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. And you play 3 games a day.
That's a big difference. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
And it might seem very little, 2x7 minutes, but
you only have 7 players. There's
seven
so much
players
to run.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's quite a lot
that
of
sounds
quite
intense.
Pretty athletic.
But now we got the rules, like the gist of it. And you also said there's the 15, and then there's the Olympic version of it.
Yeah, and you have many other versions, but that's, let's say, the most known ones.
But I like Olympic, because I think that kind of is a nice transition to get back to your story. Because, I mean, on your way, you were getting more professional, joining the women's team during your studies. And eventually you and your teammates were preparing for the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
So should we continue there?
Yeah, sure. So as you say, so as at the age of 18, basically I got into a women's team, and I also started playing for the rugby sevens, let's say the national team, so the seven-a-side team. And initially it wasn't at all professional in that sense. We would all pay to go on like a little training camps or stuff like that. But with the years, everything became way more professional. And then especially when the Olympics announced that rugby sevens was going to be Olympic, like many, many countries started to getting more budgets to get more people into rugby sevens. And that also happened in Belgium. So there was more interest also from sponsors, etc., to get us better, for us to train better. So it was a huge, huge dedication from our side, because for years, we didn't get any money. So we just were training as if we were professionals, training 6 days a week, giving all of our free time to rugby. Initially for me next to my studies, afterwards next to my full-time job. So I basically lived in my car with all my training gear in there, whether it was for sprinting, whether it was to go weightlifting, whether it was to go to rugby sessions. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty intense. And I think every year I told myself, if we're gonna have to do more, I can't do this anymore. And every year I still managed in some way or another to combine it. And yeah, then it was in 2015, I think. So the year before
Can I ask one question? Yeah, sure. So full-time job or full-time studies, either way, you were busy doing that. And for some people, that is already enough. Yet you still managed to train 6 times a week and you have a match or a game at the weekend. So you have a 9-to-5 job and then you just...
Yeah, I wish I had a 9-to-5 job.
Okay. Tell me, how did that work? You worked until what, 6, 7 or whatsoever, and then you went directly to go to practice?
Yeah.
Even morning,
exactly.
Practice before? Or how did your week look like there?
Well, basically, my week for me started on Sunday because then I went to the supermarket. There was a supermarket close by that was open. I would buy all the food that I was going to eat for a week. And then Sunday afternoon, I would prepare all my different meals. So then I was ready for the week. Then I would set my sports bag or bags ready. And then my week started on Monday. And so how that works is that I woke up, got ready for work. I basically rolled out of my bed and had everything next to me ready. I was having breakfast in the car while I was driving to my clients. Then I did my working day. And then it depends. Sometimes I left at 7, sometimes I had to leave at 6. If I had to do sprint training, and sometimes I left at 8 and I just managed my own sprint training. But one thing which was almost always the case was that I would get dressed from my business clothes towards my rugby clothes in the toilets of the clients.
Awesome. So you came there totally professional and suited up. You left there in your muddy training clothes and they were like, who's this one? What were you working with at that time?
With whom?
What was your job and whom, if you want to share that, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was working at Accenture. So it's a big consulting company. And basically my job was a change manager. So I had to go to different companies who were transforming. For example, if a big company would buy a smaller one and they would have to work in the same way, or if there would be maybe a company that wasn't working super digitally, did everything on paper and then had to transform to the digital world. I was basically making sure that people could change and wanted to change, and people don't want to change. So I had to kind of guide them and get them in the mindset and let's fight for the same purpose. Yeah. And then get them into that. Get them moving basically along that journey. So that was what I was doing. I had to drive all around Belgium. I also went to the US for some trainings. I went to do some trainings in Israel. I've lived 6 months in Paris. In the Netherlands, like all of that, and still I managed to get myself to training, whether it was by train, whether it was driving for hours, whether it was so basically I've always managed. So when people say I don't have time, I think it's more a question of I don't want to take time for something, and it's a question I think of priorities, and for me that was priority, so I would always manage to be there on time on training. Well, not always on time, but I did my best to be there as soon as I could and train. Yeah.
I really appreciate you sharing this perspective because you hit the point there. Many people that I'm also working with in the personal training environment say that time is always the factor that makes them not train. And having that talk about priorities and being able to make shit work is always the foundation in the beginning of the process. And it's really nice to see how with a crazy life you have been having, moving around, traveling for your job so much, still making it work to help people on one hand during the day transforming their business, and then you took care of your own transformation at nights preparing for the Olympic Games. So maybe we go back to that. So you had your training, and then in 2015 you said?
Yeah, so in 2015, so we had the qualification. So 1 year before the Olympics, you have the qualification, basically the European qualifications. And then just before the Olympics, you have the world qualification. So that's basically how it works. And so in 2015, we had for the first time the European qualifications for the 2016 Olympics. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we weren't that good yet, let's say. We were moving up a little bit step by step on the European scale. But there, after that tournament, we looked at each other and we were like, okay, you know what? Tokyo 2020 is going to be like our focus. So for the coming 4 years, like we promised to ourselves, we're going to give it our all. Like everybody their own 100%. It does not mean that the 100% is the same for each person.
Yeah.
So everybody has a different life. But we kind of committed to each other, okay, coming 4 years, it's all about us. It's all about rugby. And we started training like crazy. We also had a new trainer, Guillaume Mundele, awesome trainer, best trainer I've ever had in my life. He was a psychologist from background, and he knew so much on how to work on our mindset and how to basically let the team fit together. And for all the technical elements, he would go and ask other trainers who might be better in those elements. So he really made the puzzle work, and we started climbing up in those 4 years, like a lot. Like we really moved up the scale up until we were fifth out of 36 European countries. And we were like, this might even be possible. Like the top three of Europe would go to the Olympics. And we were like, yeah, I mean, we're the underdog, you know, we come from zero, nowhere, and we're climbing up the stairs. And also sponsor-wise, everything became more professional. We also started getting a little allowance, let's say a little money for training, for being there at work. I arranged that my Wednesday mornings, I was off, I was free. And so that was my gym sessions for myself, also my time to, yeah, just rearrange a little bit everything in my head, get everything back to normal, and then continue. And so also that time, I think we started going on tournaments basically twice a month. So that means that every 2 weeks, we were a weekend away going on tournaments, all my holidays, except for 5 days. 5 days, one week a year, I went snowboarding. And all my holidays was rugby, 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 rugby. I even took the maximum amount of unpaid holidays I could take without having it, without having an impact on my next year holidays. So I figured everything out with HR. And that's basically how I made it work. So I was always on the road. My family, my sisters, et cetera, they often said, like, again, rugby. Again, you have to go to rugby. I can't because I have rugby. But yeah, they were also, I think, my biggest supporters. They would watch every game because it was live streamed and all of that. So that was, yeah, from 2015 till 2019, basically my big life.
That sounds very intense, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then, yeah, that's where then my big dream got broken into pieces. And that was because a new trainer, our awesome trainer, so the one that I mentioned, the psychologist, he also worked super, super hard. He pushed his limits a million times, just like we did. And also he had his life next to it, his business life. And he, it was all too much. Like he gave it him everything he had, and he went into burnout because it was too much, very little pay by the rugby league in Belgium. And so at our most important moments, or the most important season, the season we were going to qualify, or did our best to qualify, he walked up to us at the start of the season. So that was September 2018, and he said, girls, I'm really sorry, I can't. Like, he started crying, he couldn't finish. And there we were, like in our most important season, and we didn't have any trainer anymore. And so we were really, yeah, really sad. We just couldn't believe that he was walking away. And then, yeah, I mean, you can't oblige somebody who is emotionally, physically empty. You can't keep them, which is normal. We just didn't know what to do. He had a conversation with each one of us individually. He said some really nice words to each one of us. And then he walked away. And then, yeah, we needed new trainers.
And just to put it into context, that happened after 3 years of extremely hard work, dedicating everything towards that dream, right?
Yeah.
3 years of holidays that you were just planning according to the rugby, and overtime and late workouts and everything. Yeah.
So. Yeah, everybody calling me crazy, calling us crazy. I even left my rugby club, my favorite rugby club, to go and train with other girls. Like, several other girls also left their local club to come and train all together in one club, which was even further for me. So basically I spent my life living in the car. driving to trainings and driving to my clients. And yeah, every time that I had time off was to go away for rugby. Yeah. So yeah, you can imagine how lost I felt at that moment. And then we had to find a new trainer. So for 1 month, we didn't really have a trainer. We kept on training ourselves. And then there was a little more budget, but still not a lot. And so it was decided to find trainers inside Belgium and not going to look outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they found two young guys with little training experience, lots of rugby experience, but not training experience. And I still believe that you can be an expert in a specific topic or in a specific sport, but that doesn't make you necessarily the perfect coach.
Yeah.
And especially they were given the mandate basically to be the coach without having a experienced supervisor above that. So they kind of had carte blanche, as we would say. They mm-hmm. could do whatever. And so for 7 months, we were training with those guys. And every month we would set our goals. And Tokyo 2020 was still on there, and our qualification was going to be in July 2019, so 1 year before the Olympics. And so yep. that was like our main focus. Every single training, we would say, one team, one dream, Tokyo 2020. That was the only thing which was in our mind.
Yeah, so you took that hit in September 18.
Yeah.
Found a new constellation with new coaches, maybe yeah. not optimal, but you still held on to it and continued. Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely. And then we arrived to the big explosion or the big meltdown. And that was 6 days before. So that was end of June. So 6 days before our European qualifications. So to clarify, so we had our European qualifications. You had two European qualifications. Step one was to be in the top 10. We were fifth at that moment out of 36. So that mm-hmm. should have been easy. And then the next European qualification was to be in the top three. And that was a harder one. However, I felt like we have nothing to lose. And playing against a team who has nothing to lose is always the hardest yeah. because there's no stress. And
you're already underdogs. Yeah, you
yeah,
got nothing
exactly.
to lose.
Yeah. So I really felt like, okay, it's not at all sure that we're going to go to the Olympics, but we have nothing to lose. And the top three, they are super, super stressed. So let's go. And then after that one, then you would have almost a year later, the world qualifications, okay? So July 19 was going to be the first European qualification. And 6 days before that, our trainers after training said, okay, girls, we have to say something, just sit down. And they just randomly mentioned, like, look, we've decided that we are going to disqualify for these qualifications. And I just was like, I misunderstood, so I asked a couple of times to
what?
I'm laughing now, but it wasn't funny. Yeah, so I was like, what? They said it in French, and usually our trainees are very often in French, and mm-hmm. I speak very well French, but at that time I just asked one of my teammates, like, can you please translate it into Dutch? Because I think I misunderstood. And no, that was it. So basically what they've decided is that they were gonna bring on or select a girl for these qualifications with a French passport. Well, everything that has to do with the Olympics, like everybody has to have a passport of the country. So for yeah. us, Belgium. And so this girl, basically, she had a French dad, I think, and a Belgian mom, or the other way around. But she never asked for her Belgian passport. So she had a French passport. And there were other girls that have been training with us for 10 years, for 5 years, for 3 years, whatever. Like, they gave them all their all, and they weren't selected. But this girl was. And I asked the trainers why, and I got a variety of answers. And one of the answers was like, yeah, we do not agree that every person needs to have a passport of that country. This girl, she's been living in Belgium for like forever, so she's as Belgian as you are. So we're going to make a statement and we're going to select her. And I was like, just this doesn't make sense. If you want to go and do a campaign somewhere else, but you don't have to ruin our dream with that. Then another thing was like, yeah, you know, Evelyn, if you're going to be on the pitch and you're not going to make it to the Olympics, then you're going to be super disappointed. So we rather take the responsibility for telling you that the team is not good enough yet to make it. And I just like, what? Like,
whoa.
What of a mental, I just couldn't understand that mentality. Like, for on the one hand, lying to us for 7 months that we were going to do those qualifications, then just before that, putting us with our backs against the wall and just saying, this is it, like no communication at all, like decision made,
Yeah, you weren't part in that process, right? You were just being told, hey, this is what's happening.
Exactly. And then thirdly, throwing that in our face, like with arguments that just for me didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense at all. And I just started crying, and I think I didn't stop for 3 days. I also called my sister. I have the rugby sister, so I have two mm-hmm. sisters and a brother. So one was also a rugby sister, and I called her, and I just couldn't tell her what happened. I was like, she knew something very bad happened, but mm-hmm. I just couldn't. And I drove to her place, and I think the first 30 minutes or 45 minutes, I just couldn't get any word out of my mouth. I think my heart broke in thousands, if not million pieces, and I just couldn't understand. And even still today, I still don't get it.
Yeah. But what happened then? I mean, they told you shit went crazy. Everybody was out of their minds, and then it just didn't happen.
Yeah, so then it didn't happen. We still went on that tournament, but we knew that if that girl with the French passport would put one foot on the field, then that would be over. Like we knew, okay, then we, even if we would have been first, we still wouldn't go. And so I was still hoping that this girl would step aside. So I decided I would still go on that tournament. And also the girls' team was basically divided, because you had another person who was thinking just like me, like we should do revolution, we should go against it, like this is not possible. But it's also kind of inside information, so you can't disclose it, you know. So you're kind of in this difficult situation. Then you had like the newer girls who were like, yeah, we don't even have our official position yet in the team, so if we now go against the trainers, and maybe we're never gonna be selected. Then you had other older, or let's say the elite girls like me, who for some way or another I didn't understand, they kind of switched their mind and they said, yeah, we already lost one trainer on burnout, if now we're gonna go against those trainers, then maybe we don't have any trainers again. So we just should follow the trainers, even though we don't understand why, and even though we don't understand their decisions. So the team kind of fell apart, and we left on that tournament, and I think we played our worst rugby ever, and the trainers were very mad at us, and they were shouting like, it seems like you completely forgot all the rugby we ever taught you, like how is this possible? And I just thought, guys, how can you not understand that you just broke our dreams? Like, you just 6 days ago, you just broke us completely down. You saw that everybody was crying, and now you expect us to play at our best level while they just didn't understand it. For me, I just didn't understand. And that was a tournament for the first time in my 17 year rugby career I broke a bone. So that was the injury I was telling you about. Yeah, my cheek bone. Yeah,
this is the incident when it happens. Okay, so overall, after your dreams got scattered and you still went to that tournament, it turned out to be a disaster after all, because obviously you weren't really at a state where you could reach your whole potential or play your best, and you fractured your bone. What happened then?
Yeah, exactly. And so there was, like, I had for the first time a broken bone, which was pretty crazy. I had to have surgery. And so the team, well, still was going to go on that, like, second tournament, but we knew, like, there was no chance anymore. And I did my surgery, and then in the meanwhile I saw from, let's say, far away what happened with the team, right? So you had this one girl who thought just like me, she decided to step away. So she said, okay girls, this was my last tournament, this is absolutely against my values to hide information, to communicate in a dishonest way, like all of those things. So she stepped away, and then I saw how the team kind of reacted to that. It was as if she never existed. We planned our party at the end of the season. She wasn't even invited. And I just thought, this is just going so, so wrong. Like, we always said, like, rugby is familyhood, it's like sisterhood, it's like all of that. And I just didn't see any of it anymore. And then I was thinking, as I was healing from my fractured bone, and it's my surgery, and I was thinking, okay, am I going to go back to rugby? Because we're now, let's say, August 2019, and I was thinking, am I still going to go back? I always told myself, the day I quit rugby, I'm going to travel the world. And so I was thinking, maybe that is the moment now. However, the other thing I told myself is that I always want to finish rugby on a high and not on a low. So I was kind of in between this struggle with myself. And then I decided, okay, you know what? Mid-August, my bone was healed. I said, okay, I'm going to go back to rugby. I'm going to request at work a career break of a year. I'm not going to tell anyone of the national team that I'm going to quit rugby, and I'm still going to go and train for several months, which is the hardest thing I think I've ever done, because I just didn't align anymore with team and the values. And when they said one team, one dream, I just thought, well, what is our dream then? Because we don't have a new dream. We didn't define
that vision yet. Vanished kind of, yeah. Disappeared ever since that incident.
And then hashtag sisterhood, I didn't feel like a sister anymore. So I was like, I don't know, it was very, very hard, very hard. And so that was, let's say I started training, and my goal was to play a tournament, my last tournament in Dubai, beginning of December 2019. And so I've trained, and then in October, I think everything just came together. Like, I was really in a red zone. Like, rugby was very, very tough. Then the boyfriend of one of my sisters, not the rugby sister, but my other sister, he was discovered with a very severe cancer. So that was completely going crazy. Let's say family-wise, it was very hard. Then at work, I had a new project, and it was a very tough project. And so basically all my three main pillars were shaking, and I just didn't know, like, what to do anymore. And it was, I think, the first time in my career that I was ever crying in the afternoon, like at the toilet of the client, just crying and thinking like, oh, what am I doing? And okay. Yeah, it was really, really, really tough period. But then I still decided, okay, if I quit rugby now, I'm not finishing on a high. So I have to, like, worst case that I'm training for X amount of weeks, I count them until Dubai against my will. And I said, okay, so be it. That's the worst case. But if not, I might have regret, and a regret might be so much harder to digest than pushing through now. And so I pushed through. So my work agreed I was going to go on a career break as of 2020. My local team knew I was going to quit. Like, everybody knew that was it for my last rugby weeks or my last working weeks. And I still went on that tournament in Dubai. I played a nice tournament for myself. I enjoyed my last tournament. There were two people that knew I was going to quit. So in the meanwhile, I've told two. And and then 2 weeks after we came back from Dubai, I told everybody. I explained it with a very nice story about rugby being my boyfriend, and that I basically was fighting for my boyfriend for many years, but that now we kind of grew apart because of things that happened. And I named what happened, and and I was going to step away, and that I was going to go for new adventures on my own. And that was it. That was December 19. And then, I closed off my rugby career, basically.
Yeah.
There and then.
How was that to tell everybody you were going to go? And
very sad. Like, yeah, it was. I mean, I did had a couple of months to wrap my head around that. So that was good. But it was very sad to leave people behind, I think, in some way or another. Like, when I commit to something, I always commit 100%. And for me, it's very hard to give up stuff, to give up people or to give up things, especially people. And so it was hard, but I knew it was the right thing to do. Like, I think I would have been so much more sad if I would be in an environment where I wasn't happy, or where I didn't feel valued, or where my values weren't met. And then I think the hardest thing maybe still might be stepping away as well from my local team. So I played my last game with them in January 2020, and then in 2nd of Feb I left on my trip around the world.
Which is basically the best time to go traveling, as everybody knows. Exactly. From the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Where did you go?
Yeah. I did get far, but I didn't get I didn't do many countries.
Yeah. I mean, I can just on that note, to a very smaller scale, to a much smaller scale, I can relate to this moment of, you know, stepping in the locker room and telling your teammates, hey, this is it. I also had that moment when I quit my football team. It was, and never at this high level scale as you were just talking about, but it's just not an easy moment to stand in front of your teammates and tell them, hey, this is it. So thank you for sharing. Okay. So February 2020. Let's go traveling.
And just to get back to what you say, like, it doesn't matter, I think, what scale you or what level you train on. I think you still give it your all. Like, you're still super committed with your heart, with your passion, like, whatever you do. So whether you play at the highest level or the lowest level, is just your heart which is in there. And when you have to walk away or when you decide to walk away, I think either way it's always, always hard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was it. So February 2020, 02/02/2020, I thought it was the coolest date ever. So I decided I was going to travel on that date. I told everybody it's going to be that date because I like it, no matter how expensive flight tickets are going to be, because 2020 is going to be my year.
Yes, she's laughing.
Yeah, it was going to be the year that I finally would complete my trip around the world. So I took my backpack, I took all my money. I left to New Zealand in the first place for 1 month, which was awesome. And from far away, in between my hikes and living in a van with two friends of mine, I heard a little bit COVID here and COVID there. And I kind of laughed it away. And I thought, haha, I am here in New Zealand, living the best life, like this stupid virus, whatever it is. And then I was going to go
tell you one thing. That's also what we thought in Germany and everywhere. China, this is far out. It's not gonna come here, is it? When it came here, it was like, how long is this going to take? A month or two? Yeah, we should be fine in summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, that's also what I thought. Like, I didn't believe it was going to be something big. Like, I was going to do my trip around the world and I was going to do my trip around the world. That was it. And so I was planning to go to Southeast Asia for 4 months and then half year to South America. So already the years before, I was having like a Spanish roommate so I could learn Spanish and all of that. So I would be prepared for the day that I would go and travel the world. A friend of mine, she was in Australia, and she said, okay, Evie, just come and pass by Australia on your way to Southeast Asia. I was even thinking to do a year in Australia, but then I was like, nah, like I'll do Australia later. It's not for now. And I think day 7 or 8 that I was in Australia, because I negotiated with this friend of mine that we were going to do 3 weeks together, West Coast, and then I would go on my own. Just my cousins were going to come and visit me in Bali. Mm-hmm. And so I think day 7, I just went to swim with white sharks. In Australia, I came out of the water. I took my phone and I saw my cousin sending me a message. We're going to cancel our flights. We're not going to come and see you in Bali. And I was like, what? Like, huh? What do you mean? So I called my cousins and I was like, what do you mean you're going to cancel your flights? Yeah, because the flight company, or how do you call it, like the airline, they told us if we cancel now, we would get our money back. So that's what we're going to do. And that's where it really hit me, like, shit, this thing is real.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a real thing. And I just got out of Melbourne at that time. And Melbourne has been pretty severe during COVID. Like, it has been crazy. And I think I was just 1 day or not even out of Melbourne. And then they canceled, like, the Formula One, which was happening there. And then I was continuing my drive going to Adelaide, south of Australia, where they said, okay, as of tomorrow, everything is going to go in lockdown. And I was like, okay, we just like passed by a festival there. And then we kind of moved away into West Australia. And that's where then, lockdown happened. And at the beginning, it wasn't that hard in Australia. Like the first weeks, we kind of were laughing this away. Okay, I did get a little bit paranoid with meeting new people. Mm-hmm. But besides that, at some point, some afternoon, we had like really much fun with a group, new group that we met. And we were just talking to everybody and we were laughing like, haha, imagine if we would have to take a house all together because it would be COVID. And we'd be like, yeah. I mean, we exchanged contacts, but just to meet up for a party or something. And then I think 24 hours later, we were chased away at free camps, like those free camp sites where you can camp normally. And people were like telling us, no, we have to go. Rangers were closing off all the free camps. And that's where we decided to take a house all together with 11 people next to the beach. And that's where I've been stuck for 2 months, still thinking I was going to travel the world after those 2 months.
Look at you. That didn't happen either.
No, that didn't happen either. So that's where I was then at some point really sad about as well. Realizing I was not going to travel the world. And so I had to ask for another visa because I just had a tourist visa in Australia. And then I asked for a visa for 6 months, thinking that 6 months, that's so much time. And then I can still maybe do half a year. traveling around the world, and then didn't happen either. And then I called the company after I think 8 or 10 months, and I asked them, like, how's it going in Belgium? Bad, or stay away.
Don't
like,
come.
Okay, can I then maybe have a career break a little longer? Sure, no worries. And so they gave me a career break of more or less another year. And so I was like, okay, so my 1 year around the world is going to be 1 year in Australia, 1 year around the world. And then that didn't happen either. So in the end, I stayed almost 2 years in Australia. And after those 2 months in this house with other people, we kind of could travel all around Australia. Sydney and Melbourne, they were the worst, but all the rest was open. So I went around in Australia, and that's also where I realized I really, really love that freedom, that idea of being able to go where I want, when I want. And the other thing that I also thought about is that I really love helping people move forward, like getting them out of their comfort zone. Just like I always want to learn new things and optimize what I'm doing. And I realized, okay, I really love that idea of combining both. And so I thought I need my own business. I need to start my own business. I had 30,000 euros that I've put aside to travel around the world for a year. And in Australia, I wasn't using that much. People always say it's expensive, but I think alcohol and cigarettes are expensive. But if you don't drink much and you don't smoke, then
you're fine.
You can basically live very freely. We basically camped a lot. So I wasn't using lots of money. Mm. I've been doing also some random jobs. Like I've been a kangaroo babysitter for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've been planting palm trees, like all those random things. So I had a lot of money on the side, let's say. And so I decided to, in the meanwhile, well, at that time it was 10,000 euros and then afterwards another. So in total, I think around 15,000 euros I spent on myself, on buying coaching programs to teach myself how to be a good business coach, how to build online programs, how to do all of that. And so from Australia, I basically launched my my own online company.
Wow. So we're talking, you know, this one dream with the rugby being a little bit of a problem that didn't come true. Then leaving rugby, going to go traveling, COVID hit. That was an issue. 1 year became 6 months just in Australia, and it eventually became 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So and within those 2 years, you probably had enough time to experience a beautiful continent, but also really wrap your head around what do you want to do. Is going back to my normal job that I had in Belgium really the thing that I want for my life? But you came to the realization, hey, this is not really it. This is also what we talked a little bit about in Gerlu, which with your upcoming plans now, you just bought a truck.
Yeah.
maybe you can talk a little bit about that and what is your design now? What is your plan now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people who are listening might be thinking she's crazy.
What the fuck is wrong with her?
What is wrong? Can't she just settle and be happy with that? So basically what's my plan? Yeah, so with my business, so I've decided I'm doing everything online. So I'm a digital nomad, as they call it, and I can go where I want, when I want, and still make clients happy. And as I came back from Australia, so I decided to come back on Christmas. So on Christmas Day, literally on Christmas Day at 1 p.m. I arrived. Family came to pick me up. Family party started at 3 p.m. Completely jet lagged, but it was awesome. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, as of January, I'm going to start building on my plan to live in a van. That was my idea. I was going to have my van. And then as the months went by, I started thinking maybe I should make it a little bit bigger than a van, because maybe a van isn't big enough if I want to live in it full time and I do lots of business coaching online. So then maybe I need a comfortable space to sit in. And I knew already in Australia, because the past years I've been following so many accounts on van conversions and all of that, and I've discovered there was a van life festival in the UK mid-May, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna go there, and that's where I'm gonna decide whether it's gonna become a van or whether it's gonna become a truck. At that time, I was still thinking a box truck, which is still pretty small, kind of. And then I went there and I decided, okay, it's gonna become a box truck. And I thought, okay, 3.5 tons, that's what you can drive with a normal license. And then I was thinking, yeah, 3.5 tons. Everybody tells me how hard it is to squeeze everything into 3.5 tons. And I thought, why should I limit myself with 3.5 tons if I can just get a driver license, see, and have no limits? And I thought, okay, I'm going to go
big
for my
truck
driver
it
license.
Is.
Yeah, yeah. And then I, yeah, basically in June, I decided I'm going to get my driver license. I mean, I say it now very easy and smooth. It was lots of mental struggle to decide I'm going to go for my driver license.
It didn't come from nothing. I can imagine.
But then I did get it in July. And then, as of August, I started looking for a truck, which was pretty hard struggle because I didn't know anything about trucks. But then now last Tuesday, I found the perfect truck and I signed the paper on Thursday and now it's mine.
So tell me, how high is it? How large is it?
So it's 3 meters 20 high, which is pretty high if you're standing next to it. The length is still okay. It's 7 meters, which in my mind sounds very little, but then when I see it, I'm like, whoa, it's pretty big. And the box itself is 5 meter 30. So the most box trucks that you find are like the box is 4 meters 20, 4 meters 30, but I decided that was too small, so my box is 5 30. And then I also have this tailgate, so that's gonna be my terrace. So then when I'm somewhere, I'm gonna sit on the terrace with a chair and a table. And also I'm gonna build it future proof, because on the long run, in 2 years' time, more or less, I want to add a motorbike. So I'm already going to build a motorbike garage in my truck.
Of course. But tell me, in that little box, you want to sleep, you want to work, have a terrace, and store your motorbike.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, wow. Yeah. So now I'm doing all those designs, ideas. I mean, many people do it in less space. So it's pretty feasible. You just have to think about it very well, which I'm doing now. Yeah, so that's really, really awesome. It's by the way, the truck that came from Germany. It was imported in Belgium.
Okay.
Mercedes. Yeah.
And where can are you like? I mean, right now it's just a truck. You still have to go through this whole
making
it the thing that you wanted to be someday.
Yeah.
Are you sharing this on
absolutely?
Where can people follow this? Because I'm definitely gonna hit that subscribe button. I want to see how this becomes.
So it's gonna be on my personal Instagram page. So it's ER on the road. So ER are my initials, Evelyne Rozier. So ER on the road. So there I'm gonna post all the information.
I'll put that in the show notes for all our listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, and then my business adventures you can follow on Optimiro.
Mm-hmm.
Optimiro stands for Optimize, Impact, Inspire, and also Optimize My Road, because it's my new way to freedom. But yeah, ER on the road, that's really where my truck conversion is going to be. And I'm still thinking whether I should do like a YouTube channel, or whether I'm going to make like, I have with my business, I have like a page where I can put all my learning classes on there. So I'm thinking maybe just to open it up as well for people to see my truck conversion, so I can structure it really well, because very often I think YouTube is not super structured.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still thinking about that, but everything will be on ER on the road with the link in there as soon as I figured it out. So already now you can follow stories and pictures of my beautiful truck.
It sounds super exciting. I'm definitely gonna follow you up on this. What's your elevator pitch for Optimiro? Like, what do you do? What do you offer?
What do I do? Basically, I give people the power and the courage to step out of their comfort zone, to really push their limits and to realize their dreams. And I translate that in two elements. So on the one hand, I do business coaching. So for entrepreneurs who feel like, yeah, I want to grow, but I have so many ideas and I don't really know what to do, when to do, how to do it. So I basically, together with you, I make a plan and I really help you prioritizing all of that, so you can have a straight line to optimize your road. Mm. And on the other hand, I do business storytelling. So I help people being better in expressing themselves, in telling their stories, in really sharing their experiences, because I do feel that the more people who can do that, the more authentic the world is going to be. And the more dreams are going to be realized.
I like that. So that's going a little bit away from the PowerPoint presentation slides more into a lively thing that you can experience and attach to emotionally.
Yeah.
Very nice. So I mean, overall, the unifying theme in our talk so far has been that you have had quite some setbacks in your life with, the plans of the Olympic Games and rugby, your traveling plans that got smashed due to COVID. However, it's not like you sat down and kept on crying. You did do a little bit of crying, but then you
Of course,
found
yeah.
your way through and came up with something new that you were striving for. And now you're starting in this new chapter. And there's a truck coming, and you're preparing to enter this digital nomad lifestyle. But looking back over the last, say, 7 years, it must have been ever since 2015, you said, I'm going to commit to this Olympic dream. What were your biggest learnings from all these ups and downs? Like, what do you take from that?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I really realized is that anything is possible. So you can do anything you want in your life. And many people say, yeah, no, not everything is possible, because we see obstacles and we see limits. And I think really realizing that you can do whatever you want, if you start working on it today, you can get where you want to be in the future, then really figure out what that future is and start working towards. And no matter how many times you get smashed down, I think that's part of the learning process. Failing or being challenged is part of success. It's part of a journey, and just really go for it. You can really do anything you want, anything. As long as you can imagine it, you can reach it.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what you wrote on that whiteboard in the morning assembly.
Yeah.
I think it was you go down and you go up, right?
Yeah. That's what we often say. You have to slow down to speed up. Often I ask people to stand up and to jump as high as they can. And then I ask, like, what did you just do? And they would say, like, yeah, jump high. I said, okay, and what did you do before you jump high? And you can try it at home yourself before you listen.
Not in the car, please, when you're listening
to
this
car,
in the car.
No, but you always have to bend your knee. So you really have to go down to go up. And I think that's, in life, that's often how it happens. Like, before you're leveling up, it becomes very hard. Everything is challenging you. It's like you're fighting against the world and nobody's with you. But then if you keep on pushing through, that's where you're actually going to see the highs, and you're going to manage and reach your goal. Yeah, whatever that is.
The second bullet point you wrote down was peacefully let go.
Yeah.
Do you want to put words on that too?
Yeah. So peacefully let go. I think often when something goes against us, we feel like, or maybe if a relationship goes wrong, for example, for me with rugby, but can be also in your love life or whatever it is, we do our best to push it away and to ignore it as much as we can and to throw it as far behind us as we want. But that's not going to work out. I always imitate it with a pen. If you have to let go of a pen, I usually invite them people in front, and I say, let go of the pen, and people would like throw it. They would throw it backwards. They would do like a double flip with the pen and then let it go. And then you can just also release it on your hand. You let go of it, but it's still lying there, and you actually accept that it's there. I accept that my dreams were broken down, and instead of ignoring it, like, I've been crying for it. I've been going through it, and it's there, and it's part of my life, and it made lots of changes for me. So I peacefully let go and acknowledge it, and that's it, move on.
Yeah, thank you for sharing this. And then the last point is make yourself small equals faster.
So I think I've always been doing many things for other people, and I forgot to actually take time for myself. At Gelu, I asked some people to come and do a flip in front. First of all, when they're doing a flip, backflip, front flip, whatever it is, you bend down. So the first thing we've addressed, then they tuck. So they make themselves very, very small, because that's when your rotation goes so much faster. And very often we feel like taking time for ourselves or taking time to reflect on things slows us down. But it actually, by taking that time to think and rearrange everything in your mind, actually helps you to then go so much faster towards your goal. So don't just keep on doing things because I'm doing them always like that and I have to continue, I can't stop. Really dare to press pause for a second and rearrange everything, so you will go so much faster after.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. You know, oftentimes we are so stuck in the hamster wheel and just running. And I've had so many times where I had an epiphany or just like this, oh wow, yeah, that makes so much more sense, when I actually stepped aside and thought about, hey, what do I actually want to do besides just making things work in my normal life at the moment, and just getting this greater piece of clarity then gave me the energy back to really strive for that thing. So absolutely. I can absolutely agree on that and relate to it. Evie, thank you so much for sharing this. I think now is a great time to, before we finish, come up with the personal questions. would you like to start? Should I start? How do you want to do it?
I can share a question. It's I have a question. If you would ever go to prison, why would it be?
Oh God, I'm such a noble and brave boy. If I would ever go to prison, for what would it be? I mean, we met at parkour, so probably it's because I was jumping, climbing, or balancing on something I'm not supposed to, and it's a thing where, you know, it's like really not allowed, and then I broke down a wall or I don't know, a picture or something, and then that's really, really bad. I'm not sure if I'm brave enough to do things that are like really illegal, enter and rob a bank or something.
No, that's all right. When I got asked this question, I thought about it as well, and I said, okay, it will probably be because I'm convincing too many people to go and live the free life, and then all the electricity companies, they go bankrupt because everybody has their own solar panels and everybody's living on the road, and so the official normal society kind of crumbles down because people create their own communities and their own freedom lives.
Anarchy starts.
Yeah, again.
That would be you then. Okay. Evie, your most, maybe you shared it already when you were talking about diving with the white sharks, but maybe you also have another one. So your most memorable moment or experience while being on the road, while being traveling?
Most memorable experience.
You know, like this goosebump feeling when you're like, oh my God, I feel so alive right now because I'm rushed with so many emotions going through my blood.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. But there's two moments that jump into my mind first. And one is when I was in New Zealand. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of Doubtful Sound. You have Milford Sound and Doubtful Sound, which are like the fjords of New Zealand. And Milford is like the more touristy one, but we did Doubtful Sound, which is 42 kilometers of rivers and those hilly hills full of forests and ice cold water. And I was kayaking there like with a big sweater, with a beanie, like I don't know how you call it, like on my head. And I was just there with the guide and 8 people, and that was it. Like there was nothing else, just the sound of the kayaks. And I just looked around at nature, and I just, my eyes were full of tears just because I was like, wow, I'm so privileged to be able to experience this, to be kayaking here with nature around. Like we are nothing compared to what nature has already experienced, and our lives are basically nothing with everything that is here. And that was for me like a wow, crazy, crazy goosebump emotional moment. And I think the other one that jumped into my mind is when I was swimming with whale sharks in Australia. So basically it's just out in the open, and you jump from a boat, you hope to see them, and you start swimming, and they're just massive. They're as big as a bus, and you can't keep up with them. Like if you go, like you have to be a little bit sporty, you just have to keep on pedaling kind of, but you just swim next to it, and then you have like the sun reflecting underwater, you have like your snorkel, and you can just see like every single texture of how this big fish is. And that's also a moment where I just felt so small and so wow that this animal was there, that I had the chance to actually witness it in their own peaceful environment. And I think that's two moments that really, really touched me.
That's really beautiful. Yeah, thank you for sharing. I don't want to say anything else. This is beautiful. Thank you. Thank you again for being here today, for sharing your experiences. I have high respect for that. I think it's not easy to talk about this stuff, you know, when dreams are being shattered and not coming true, but still having to fight your way through with this. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks for
it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. If you have any words that you want to share with our audience, please do so. Again, let them know where they can find you. I'll make sure to put the links in the show notes. So the stage is yours.
Yeah, I think the last thing I want to say is reach out, like dare to reach out. I'm more than happy to connect with you. I love hearing other people's dreams, ideas, and I think very often we're scared to reach out to somebody because we feel like maybe they don't answer or maybe they don't like us or whatever it is. But I think I felt several times lonely or I didn't know who to talk to, and it always helped when I would start talking to people, and that's how people connect. So I would say, like, dare to reach out if there was something of my story that you liked or that you have questions about, like, really just send me a message or just say hello on ER on the road. If you want to follow any of my freedom adventures, ER on the road as well. And if there's anything that you want help with, then I'm more than happy to have a chat as well.
Awesome, you guys. Reach out to Evie. She'll be happy to help. Thank you also to our listeners, to our audience for making it all the way to this end. I'm looking forward to the next episode. I'll hear you in 2 weeks. And until then, train smart and move well.